everybody. Welcome to the Fiction File Podcast, where we explore the wide world of narrative entertainment, from movies to literature and everything in between. My name is Jason Boyd. I'm the editor of Fiction File, and I'm joined remotely today by managing editor Corinne Asbell. Hey, Corinne.
Hello, everyone.
Also, our special guest is returning today. So welcome back, a member of our street team, really the, I would say, team lead of our street team, Tess Raven. How are you doing, Tess?
Hello. I am delightful. Also, I realize I didn't describe what the street team is on the last episode. So if you see any stickers that say Fiction File out in Dallas, it may or may not be me. I don't know.
Yes. And there may possibly be bookmarks at some point.
Right.
But, you know, these are also elves, I hear. So,
and
very good.
If you consider the stickers vandalism, they were not done by the street team. We were robbed.
Right.
Tess gets robbed every day. It's a horrible fact, but stickers are a premium on this market.
You can buy with a pack of Fiction File stickers.
Yes. Well, yeah. Please, please do buy a pack. So today, we'll be poring over a single work of fiction. After we introduce this work of art, we'll discuss what makes it enjoyable, what makes it a work of art in the first place, what makes it universally relatable, and finally, we'll talk about what it could have done better. So now that we have our format and we have our returning Batman-loving guest, what piece of narrative entertainment are we talking about today, Kareen?
Well, we're finishing up the Christopher Nolan-directed Batman trilogy with The Dark Knight Rises. The screenplay was written once again by Nolan with the help of his brother Jonathan. It was produced and distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures and released on July 16, 2012. Along with returning stars Christian Bale, Michael Caine, Gary Oldman, and Morgan Freeman, Anne Hathaway, Tom Hardy, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt joined the cast.
8 years after the Joker's reign of anarchy, Batman, with the help of the enigmatic Catwoman, is forced from his exile to save Gotham City from the brutal guerrilla terrorist Bane.
I just gotta say, I'm voting for Tess for the next Penguin.
Very good. Thank you so much, Tess. And thank you for bringing your London accent back.
Of course.
So let's go over our critical opinion summary here of what people thought when this was released, the critics and audience. IMDb has an 8.4 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes has it at 87 critics, 90 for audience. And Metacritic has it at 78 for critics and 8.2. So these are subject to change, but as I would have predicted, it's mediocre. It's a high B, it seems like, from most people. But, you know, hey, we're going to talk about how it's good and bad. So I guess I've tipped my hand. But let's go into the first topic here, and we'll start with you, Corinne. What makes The Dark Knight Rises enjoyable?
Well, this film has those mediocre B rating reviews from the Batman fans and the critics. And that's kind of fair because Heath Ledger's untimely death was a huge loss to the franchise. And well, the world in general, I mean, he did other things than Batman. But we're talking about the movie specifically. But because of his death, Christopher Nolan wasn't even sure if he wanted to commit to returning to the franchise. I mean, at one point during the filming of Inception, Warner Brothers was laying on the pressure, suggesting he use Riddler as a villain, and even suggested casting Leonardo DiCaprio, which I really can't picture that. Leo as the Riddler?
That would have been good. I can picture it. Would have been good.
But that's because you're a Leo fanboy. But despite all of that, I think Nolan delivered us a good ending to his trilogy. While not a Ledger quality performance, Tom Hardy's Bane was still captivating in its own right, particularly after the last ridiculous excuse for Bane we saw in the cinema, you know, the hopped up idiot They just kind of like, what was that? Batman Forever? Batman and Robin? So, yeah. One of those. Schumacher Batman. Anyways, yeah. But this stripped down, more realistic version that Tom Hardy gave us was more of an actual challenge for Batman. It was both a physical and intellectual challenge, which we need in our Batman villains. And then, you know, the Bane voice that he had, it just gave something to talk about. Everyone to make their jokes about it. And everyone I know has a Bane voice just waiting to speak it as soon as you mention The Dark Knight Rises. You know, everyone cups their hand over their mouth and goes, well, Batman. I don't have a Bane voice. But it gave us something to talk about instead of Christian Bale's Batman rasp. But this Bane is a master strategist, and he uses the turmoil that Gotham is in following Harvey Dent's death 8 years earlier, and he takes advantage of it and challenges Batman. Now, I know I've said in earlier episodes of the podcast that The Dark Knight wasn't a good Batman movie. It was a good Joker movie. So despite Heath Ledger's amazing performance, I enjoyed seeing The Dark Knight Rises, and because this movie was a Batman movie again. It was still a bit of a reactionary Batman as opposed to Batman Begins, where we see Bruce be proactive, but it's still a good end to the trilogy for the most part. It's definitely the most flawed out of the three, but it's still a damn good time.
Good point. I mean,
don't sound so excited.
I don't know. I guess it's a good time. It definitely made me want to eat popcorn.
That's what movies are supposed to do.
But you do make good points on, like, what is good about it, honestly. And they kind of did the best out of a bad situation.
Very true.
But yeah, I don't know. We'll get to my point later. But Tess, what do you think makes The Dark Knight Rises enjoyable?
Alrighty. Well, seeing as I was 15 when this movie came out, I mean, well, okay, listen, I was pretty smart. I wasn't stupid or anything, but I mean, I was not prepared for all the twists and turns in this movie. Should I have realized that Batman's girlfriend was the real villain? Yeah. Did I? No. I liked that. I mean, I was generally like, in the theater. Should I have realized that Batman would be trapped to create tension? Of course. But I didn't. I enjoyed watching him get all sweaty and buff in a dark prison. I mean, maybe not grow a beard, but I mean, who cares? I enjoyed watching Anne Hathaway in latex, because so, wew.
Who didn't?
Which, by the way, she had to train in martial arts for the movie and said it was probably the most physically demanding part she's ever had to play. So props to her for that. I enjoyed listening to Bane speak. Also, woo. And what is it? The spunky cuteness from Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I mean, all in all, the movie is very enjoyable because of the cast. Batman, Catwoman, Bane, Talia al Ghul, John Blick, hot, sexy. Very appealing to my eyeballs, okay? Very appealing. Let me reiterate, I was 15, so it's a perfect time for finding my interests, if you know what I mean. It had it all, but it did not have an orgy. Can I say that? I said it already. It's okay. I'm serious, though. Really, like, that's the only thing that's missing from this movie, so.
Yeah, it's fine to say that. We've established that Jason doesn't edit anyway.
Well, you know, at least I have this reputation built in now. But I can attest to the fact that Tess has multiple times mentioned that this movie needs an orgy. So this is not hyperbole for the sake of a podcast. This is truly Tess's deeply felt belief.
Okay, but what movie wouldn't benefit from having an orgy?
Well, okay.
Schindler's List, maybe, but
that's a follow-up, you know. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's so good.
The podcast jumped the chart quickly.
Grumpy Old Man would be a little bit different with an orgy.
I need brain bleach. Hold on.
Oh, God. So I will I will try to pick up after that one. But what makes The Dark Knight Rises enjoyable, you ask me? Thank you so much. Let me start out with a confession. So I'm actually in love with Tom Hardy, and oh. I've said it. But who isn't? Exactly. And I mean, he's just amazing. He kills it as Bane. I'm not a fan of this movie, as you've probably guessed, and I'll get into why later. But Tom Hardy is just a delight. I mean, honestly, the voice is, it's a ridiculous Monopoly Man. But yet he's so, like, enjoyable as it. And he's so large. And he's a pretty big guy himself, but, like, he just seems like this big personality. And it was an interesting way to take Bane being like a hulking behemoth and make it more like his personality was a hulking behemoth. Mm-hmm. And so I really liked that. And I liked him in general. I just had some other problems with it. And of course, it's still, you know, it's a Batman movie. It's got action. It's got cool fight scenes. It's got great directing. So, I mean, it has a lot of stuff going for it, but to me, like, without Tom Hardy, I would have really not liked this movie very much. But Tom Hardy really, like, brought it up, and, like, every time he came on screen, I was excited to, like, see what he would do.
Even you wouldn't have liked this movie if they didn't have Tom Hardy, but they had Leonardo DiCaprio instead?
Mm. Well, I'm saying if they just took Tom Hardy out, they'd have to replace him with someone that's good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because they still could have, I guess they could have had Catwoman be the main villain. I don't know. But, you know, Talia in general would be the main villain. But then Catwoman could be helping Talia. I don't know. I'm not a writer.
Says the writer. Talia could help Catwoman and then they kiss.
Well, just. I was heading that direction, but I'm glad you said something.
I feel like in 2012. All the fanboys and, you know, the ones that weren't, you know, like jerking one off would have been like, that's just pandering. We need more pandering.
You know, I like that.
That's the kind of pandering I can get behind.
No, I'm not going to say it. Okay.
Anyway, that's about all I can find that's enjoyable about the movie. So let's move on to the next topic, and I'll keep this one so we can just keep it low and keep it sour for just another minute, and then we'll bring it back up. But what makes The Dark Knight Rises a work of art? So to me, it's nice to look at. And okay. That's about it. I mean, that's like, that's kind of like the only thing that makes it art, you know? Like, to me, it has that same seriousness and commitment to cinematography and cinema and, like, auteur vision and all that kind of stuff that the last movie did that I was saying made it art. Mm-hmm. But with this movie, it almost feels pretentious. And I think a lot of it just has to do with that it's not backed up by, like, really emotionally connected storylines. There's not, like, a lot of investment in what's happening. So it just felt a little flat and, like, you know, it was a nice moody directing piece, but it wasn't quite a work of art beyond a visual work of art. But Kareem, what do you think?
I disagree.
Hold on a second. You know the movie Ratatouille?
Yes.
You know the food critic, Anton Ego? That's what you sounded like about this movie. Just like, just laying it all out. Hear everything that I do not like. Good, though. Good, but...
Why is this movie good? I don't know. This is why it's not. But you nailed it.
Listen, I like Tom Hardy, so we got that going.
Who doesn't?
Exactly.
Okay. I will disrespectfully disagree with your saying it doesn't have a good story and that it's just visually appealing. I'm actually going to get into that very deeply, and I brought out my $5 words, but that's later on in the podcast. But right now, I think it's a work of art, because, you know, like I referenced earlier, it being how it was a good end to the trilogy, and that fact itself is what makes it a work of art. It's a powerful way to close out the series, and Nolan is actually able to bring the movie back full circle thematically. We see a callback to the League of Shadows, a reminder of the wide disparity of socioeconomic differences in Gotham. Even Bane's dependence on drugs is a bit of a reference to Scarecrow from Batman Begins. You know, his dependence on the fear gas, the fear toxin to do his work, and, you know, Bane's dependence on painkillers. And, you know, of course, we've got the brief appearances of Liam Neeson and Cillian Murphy reprising their roles. But to me, it's just, it's a sign of a well-written script that is able to accomplish these types of references and Easter eggs without making it feel like they're cramming them in our faces. Like, they didn't bring this back and be like, see, this was in the first movie. See, this is what I did. And give me a gold star. I just think it just flowed effortlessly. And I really was satisfied with the ending.
Fair enough. it does what the final movie in a trilogy should do. But to me, I'm like, you know, I'm glad that this multi-million dollar major studio tentpole movie, the finale to a trilogy that's made billions of dollars, was well thought out. you make good points though. You used a few $5 words, not 10. I like that. So I can't wait for more.
I'm having to step up and fulfill the professor role while Bolton has abandoned us to get married.
Yeah, well, one of us has to.
And it's not you.
It's not. No, I will be the class clown. As usual. But yes, Dalton is off gallivanting in love. What a douche. But no, he's, you know, he's getting married. I've been there. You know, I feel sorry for him. But jokes aside, we have the lovely Tess, which is a great segue to Tess, what do you think makes The Dark Knight Rises a work of art?
Well, I do want to add on to Creed. So, like, you know, I appreciate the fact that you as well like this movie with me. But I actually don't think the writing is that great. But, you know, to me it's more like a visual thing. But, you know, I appreciate the sentiment. It's nice. As if I was on the movie, like I care. But anyway. okay, I'm going to come in with another analogy for this one because it's really the only way I can make sense of it. But if you've ever been to a cool mall or one of those outside shopping areas that always has one of those candy shop vendors, they've always got one of their employees making candy in the window. Whatever the candy is, fudge, taffy, hard candies, it doesn't matter. There is always a huge crowd around them. And they're watching it, they're saying, like, how do they make that? What are they doing next? Ooh, I see. You know how it goes. Like, you know what everybody says. Even the dads get super into it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're perplexed, but also once you watch, you're like, I should have known that's how it's done. Like, none of us are truly that surprised watching them, but you also aren't going to stop looking at it. Like, it's food art. You know what I'm saying? It makes you think about stuff. Like, maybe I could make that at home. Or maybe I could make my own bakery. Maybe not. I don't know. But that's how this movie was for me. I was pretty entranced. Even if it is predictable, the movie is shiny and loud and it makes you want to eat popcorn. You know, that's artful in my opinion. I wanted to be Batman afterwards. I wanted to be Robin. I wanted to be Catwoman. You know, which is why now I have a Batman onesie. Whether you want to copy the candies from a candy shop or pretend you're Batman at home, if it intrigues you like that, I think it's art. So that's my hot take.
That's a really good way to look at it. I like that.
Thank you.
That's a good one. And to me, this is the light and airy, but mostly made of air cotton candy. That's what this movie is. But yes, moving on. Very good points, though, actually. And, you know, it is a spectacle, just like, you know, all that stuff in the carnivals and whatnot. But Tess, why don't you keep it and tell us why The Dark Knight Rises is universally relatable? What makes it universally relatable?
Alrighty. So let me break it down real quick. The most relatable character is John Blake, a.k.a. JGO. I'm going to start there, all right? I'll take the heat for saying that later. But to me, he's the only one who really has hope in this movie. So if you listen to the last episode, I say this too. At the end of the day, the one thing that makes us the most human is us having hope. And JGL has got it. It's in his eyes. It's in his walk. It's in his voice. Like, homie is really hoping for everything to go well. Because it has to. Like, you know the feeling. You're down on your luck. You're getting kicked from every angle. Feel like you have nothing left to give. But if you stop fighting, you know you'll lose. The big man will win. None of us want that. None of us want to see that. Like, in this movie, we see Batman and Gotham and Alfred and James Gordon and Lucius Fox get kicked from every single angle, bro. Every one of them is tired of fighting. Even Bane, bro. But I'm not saying they all entirely lose hope. Obviously, that is not the case because that's not how superhero movies work. But they weren't beaming with it like he was. Like, they weren't aching to find a solution at every turn, you know. To me, it's that spunk that makes this so understandable. I feel like John Blake is us as kids. Like, we always get told, no, you can't be a ballerina because you're too fat. No. You can't get on that roller coaster because you're not tall enough. No, you can't buy that toy because you don't need it. No, 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 no. You know, maybe that's not exactly the examples, you know, your examples I made up. But you get what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Like, the world is beating you down. But it doesn't always feel like that because you're a kid. You know, there's got to be some good energy somewhere. Maybe a family fairy godmother, a knight in shiny armor, whoever, whatever the hell it is, you feel it in your bones. Your favorite team is going to win the playoffs. You're going to get accepted to your dream school. You're going to get that job, bitch. Like, you just got to keep fighting off all those bad energies and negativity around you. And just maybe once it's all done, once everyone has seen the fight you've brought to the table, maybe then you can get your own Batcave in uniform and fight the good fight as your own superhero, as Robin. But I will say, just coming for me, we already are our own superheroes. Some of us just don't know it yet.
I like that. We've got the humor, the enthusiasm, and then we're bringing it all down for the deep message.
Exactly.
Yeah, and thank you, Tess, although I'm not quite ready to reveal my secret quite yet. But yes, love that, and I do know what you're saying. In fact, I know exactly what you're saying. I know.
I feel it.
You feel? I'm appealing to the young kids out there. Yes, I.
Oh God.
Very good. I love it.
You're like the embodiment of that meme. God, what is his name?
Fellow kids.
Yeah. What's up, fellow kids?
What's up, fellow kids?
Steve and Jimmy. That's his name.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, you know, I enjoy having someone who's a decade younger than me, but also acts like, because I act so old, a quarter of a century younger than me. So I love that. Great enthusiasm. And, you know, you're right, honestly. He is kind of the most relatable, and honestly, it's like I think he really hit on something with the tiredness that everyone has. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the point, you know. Like, I think it's they're trying to say, you know, Batman's kind of on his way out. It's been 8 years since the last movie, so he's getting old. he's not old yet, but he's getting older. He's not going to be able to do this forever. And then he, you know, spoiler alert, he retires at the end. Mm. So it's like he's going to need a new person. So it's like this guy's got all the spunk and energy because he's new at it. So he's the one to take over, you know?
Yeah, so, it's like when Michael Phelps left, you know? It's like, but I don't know who's next, the next Michael Phelps. But, you know, like, it's like who's going to get, like, 8 medals?
Yeah, we need someone who gets 8 medals. But, I don't know, Ryan Lochte, maybe Ryan Lochte.
Yeah.
But, anyway, great points. So, for me, what makes it universally relatable is I like the stuck in the hole analogy of, you know, in the prison, having to rise up under your own strength of will. That's good, solid, kind of Nietzschean stuff. I don't think it was necessarily well executed. I mean, I think we got the gist, and they certainly piled on the stakes. But it just didn't really hit me in the feels, like, you know, other than the exchange with, like, Alfred, you know, never, and all that stuff, you know, all that kind of stuff, which kind of worked a little bit. It just, it's like, it could have worked even better. And I'll kind of mention later what they could have done to make it work better and why I think maybe it doesn't work that well. But I do think that that's one of the most relatable things because it's kind of about being stuck in a rut and having to shake off the rust and remember why you started in the first place.
And so then it's like 6-pound abs.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's what I do every time I shake off the rust. But yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's that. But other than that, you know, not much is relatable. But
that's where you're wrong.
I'm just hating on this one. I know. No, I'm sorry. But
I just can't believe that you didn't like see the what is the most relatable thing about this movie.
Okay. Well, Kareem, tell us what's the most relatable thing.
I feel like you failed me here, Jason.
Well,
you're my sensei.
I have to continue the streak.
Okay, for me, The Dark Knight Rises, it just really highlights the divide between the rich and the middle class. I mean, Gotham City is rife with poverty and crime due to the economic inequality. I can't speak, sorry. This political and social conflict is one of the reasons that Bane is able to carry out his plans to wrest power away from the 1% and deliver it to the people, which thereby collapses the social order. The fact that Bane is able to demolish authority in Gotham so easily just highlights how unstable the system is to begin with and how much of our comfortable lives rely on this illusion. The Dark Knight Rises presents us with the standard good versus evil, but in this case, it's really an allegory for an abundance of resources versus the scarcity of resources. And despite most everyone rooting for Batman to save the day, Bane's message struck a chord with many at the time. He says that he wants the people to reclaim what is rightfully theirs. And then he establishes martial law and alienates Gotham from the rest of the world. Now, The Dark Knight Rises was actually filmed at the height of the previous economic recession. But it also mirrors current circumstances in the world today, and particularly circumstances in the United States. America's the continent. Particularly the United States mirror the social breakdown and highlight just how vulnerable our society is. And it's very disconcerting, to say the least. Like, it really highlights a lot of the fact that, you know, how different everything is. And it just, whether blowing up a football field and blowing up some bridges or a pandemic that's being handled by not handling it, you know, just things like that really just shows how easily society can crumble.
Well, bro, listen.
You made some good-ass points right there, my dude.
Thank you.
Like, you make it that... that's not good. That hit. That really hit. That was... You nailed that, my G. Like...
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would just say that to me, it actually kind of had the opposite effect to me.
Oh.
Because it was the bad guy who was like, hey, we need to like rise up and, you know, take the city back and all that. And then it was like there wasn't really like a whole lot of sympathy for the actual poor people. They were like the criminals rising up. And like the people we were following were police officers trying to stop them from rioting. And so it's kind of like, to me, if anything, it's sort of like, yes, it piggybacked on sentiments. And it piggybacked on the whole Bernie, you know, because Bernie was kind of like rising up on that. And it piggybacked on that, but it kind of villainized it a little bit, even if it seemed to be sympathetic. Like it didn't really, it because of its strange bedfellow with being Bane, the proponent of it, it Bane, made it.
Bane's not sympathetic. He's not like, he didn't do this because he felt bad for the poor, downtrodden, oppressed people. He did this because he wanted power. And because this is what, you know, Talia al Ghul was whispering in his ear. You know, how going back again to Batman Begins, the League of Shadows wanted to take out Gotham because it had, you know, gotten corrupt. But right, that's you talk about these criminals, these people are criminals because they're poor. You know, they've had to go and steal things, then they got caught for petty theft, you know, because they didn't have the money or something to feed their family. I'm not saying all of them, but a lot of criminals in our society are that because of the way that they, the circumstances they're born in. You know, right.
Go on.
You always hear the stories about people that rise up above their station, but the fact is most people aren't able to rise up because the deck is really stacked against them. If you think about it, you know, looking at neighborhoods just around us, you know, certain school districts are in the more affluent neighborhoods. They have the better schooling as opposed to the poorer neighborhoods. They don't have as good of schooling. Many people don't have as many opportunities. And, you know, say they get busted for something, you know, our prison and jail system in this country is a joke. People aren't given the opportunity to really like come out. Once you're a prisoner, once you're a felon for life, you're branded from life, and you pretty much get no opportunities to get better.
Right.
I'm done. I'm done.
I completely agree. I completely agree with you on that. That's the current state of affairs. But to me, that just makes my point in that Bane is not sympathetic. And he's just wanting power, and he's in charge of everything. And they didn't have a focus point, a character who was suffering under poverty and had to make the hard decisions on whether to loot and riot or just, you know, starve or let their family starve. I mean, for instance, JGL, how much better would it have been if that Robin character was actually, you know, like an orphan or someone who was poor on the streets and homeless.
Wasn't he an orphan?
Yeah, he was.
Well,
I get what you're saying. Damian Wayne was not an orphan.
He could have been living as an orphan.
Gotcha.
Instead of just, yes, I was also in an orphanage. but like, you know, he could have been like on the streets as a young man, you know, just 17, 18. And that would have been, to me, a much more relatable Robin and would have given us a viewpoint into people's lives that we could sympathize with so that we were conflicted on whether or not Batman should put an end to it or not. But I get your point. I mean, and obviously, like, these are, you know,
extreme.
These are horrible systemic. These are systemic problems that are serious, and you're completely right about that. I just think that they didn't do it justice by not giving it a viewpoint character that we could relate to and like, who stood on that side of the line.
Okay, I'll give you that. That there could have been someone more relatable so that we could have seen from the other side, you know, because we see a lot of the excuse me, blue collar workers in Gotham that are upset and they're part of this. But, you know, the fact is Bane just took advantage of the systemic oppression just like everyone else did. I feel like it just struck a chord with people. And like when I was looking into this, you know, there's like a lot of articles that have been written on the socioeconomic impact of The Dark Knight Rises. So I get what you're saying, and I'll agree with you on that one point.
Okay, well, that's enough. So I'll take it.
That's all you get this year. That's your one per year.
Man, I had another one I wanted to use it for, but Corey, tell us now, elucidate further on what could The Dark Knight Rises have done better?
I don't have any more big words. I'm sorry.
Oh, they were so good.
Okay, Nolan said from the beginning that he didn't want to leave his Batman open-ended, that he, I know I've been harping on the end of the trilogy the entire podcast, but this is the end of the trilogy. But he really just wanted, this is it, this is his Batman story. There's nothing going to pick up from there. Christian Bale's Batman is done. And I think he definitely accomplished that. But I think he accomplished it in the worst possible way ever. Like, I have almost as much love for Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Tess does. The man is beautiful. He's a great actor. And I think he did a great job in this movie. But did we have to call him Robin John Blake? Couldn't his name just have been John Blake? And he's the upstanding youthful police officer that, you know, figures out who Batman is and who Bruce leaves the keys to the Batcave to. Did we really just have to go for that groan-worthy throwaway line about his real first name being Robin? Like, let's say if this movie was going to have a sequel, this wasn't the end, and we're going to have Joseph Gordon-Levitt in charge, he's still not going to be going by Robin. He's going to put a Batman suit on. I mean, he's got everything. Mm-hmm. He's not going to like, oh, wow, we have these really good suits here, all well protected. I think, you know, we're kind of about the same size. We could fit. Let me
make spray paint them red.
Yeah, but he's not going to do that. He's not going to look at these bat suits and be like, what if I wore some underwear and a shirt with a big R? No one will know it's me. I mean, obviously, you know, they had Robin suits and the Schumacher Batmans and whatever, blah, blah. But he's not going to do that. So there was no point having to have a Robin reference. He wasn't going to be Robin. And yeah. I can still remember seeing the big reveal in the theater. And I was looking at my friend and we're just like, really? And there was probably some eye rolling too, but it's been 8 years. So I'm just going to assume there was. But it just felt cheesy and necessary in an otherwise good movie. Unless you're Jason, which you don't like it. But that's my main thing they could have done better. And I've got another little secondary point here. And that's the adaptation of Talia al Ghul. In the comics, she was kind of a very gray shaded character. She had sincere feelings for Batman. But in the movie, she's just a villain. She's got absolutely no moral conflict. It's just straight black and white with her. You know, there's no like shades of gray, anything about, you know, even though she pretended to have feelings for Bruce as Miranda Tate, she just straight up was a villain. And I think it was really a waste of a good character.
Yeah, good points. And I definitely agree with the Robin thing. I was like, okay.
Otherwise he was a great character. You know, and I understand that they don't want to have too many new characters like Rachel Dawes, because, you know, that went over well. But I would have been fine with it.
It's not like it's Robin other than the name.
Yeah.
Like, it's like Robin wasn't a cop, you know, so it's like it's not like, oh, it makes sense. It's just tacked on at the end.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a whole slew of Robins that they literally, if they wanted to have this throwaway line and make us think that there was going to be a Robin, why didn't they just make Dick Grayson a cop, or Damian Wayne, or God, what's his name, the one that nobody likes?
Jason. Hold on a second.
No, his name's Jason. Jason Todd. And then, well,
I thought you were talking to me, the other superhero.
And then the other Robin, Tim, whose name I can't remember. You know, and then, like, not even talking about, you go back to Dark Knight Returns, and you got freaking Carrier, whatever her name is, the little redhead girl. They could have just picked any Robin.
You know, so, according to Wikipedia, we have Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, Tim Drake, Stephanie Brown, and Damian Wayne.
Yeah, that's it. Her name's not Carrie. I don't know why I think her name is Carrie.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah, so, he's none of those.
Yeah, why invent a character? But that's it. My soapbox is up. You know, I've had my rants for this episode. No,
I agree with you. Well, I've had them too, but Tess, what do you? You've been the most positive one. What for you? What do you think The Dark Knight Rises could have done better?
All right. Okay. Let me just say this, because I really see the adults in this room hating on the end scene. Honestly, that was my favorite part of the whole movie. And I really think it's mainly because when I was watching it as a teenager, I saw it and I didn't know anything about the comic books or anything. So, like, I'm watching it and I didn't see the connection at all. Like, I didn't even know that, like, he could have been Robin. Like, I would have been confused at the end of the movie. I've been like, okay, like, what's this dude doing in there? But when they said Robin, I was like, ah! And I got hype, bro. Like, I got so excited. I was like, yeah, boy. Yeah, you do that thing. Like, I really wanted, like, another movie with him in it and him to be, like, doing his business. It made a lot of sense. I was like, thank you. I needed you to say it because I had no idea that that was the connection. So maybe it was for, like, clueless people. I mean, I definitely was clueless on that end, so. But regardless of that, to me, the movie was hella chaotic. Like, there was a lot going on all of the time. Like I said earlier, it's big and shiny and loud, very loud. Like, I had to look up the plot for the movie again just because I could only remember, one, how hot everybody was, two, how the ending was nice for me, and three, how the score feels like you're watching fireworks. And, you know, maybe it's so loud because it feels like fireworks when you were in the movie theater. But yeah, again, if you're not a 15-year-old boy watching it like me, it's not that great of a movie if the things you like best have mostly nothing to do with the plot. So, I mean, I get it. You know, I understand.
Well, you know, I how old was I at the time? My God. I was not 15 years old, but yet I still get
25.
Oh my God. Oh, that makes me feel so old.
You feel old. Ask me how old I was.
How old are you? No, let's not do that. I don't want to
get
hit. I don't want to get hit. I said stop. Never mind.
I'll just have you know, I just celebrated my 21st birthday.
Well, congratulations. We should go drinking. Fabulous. Well, great, great point there, Tess. And, you know, I liked it. It was a spectacle. But, you know, for my part, I have some more things that, you know, I think The Dark Knight Rises could have done better. So, for me, you know, I don't really know where to start. I think, you know, you just scrap it and start over with a new script. It's just too much to me. It's just too much. There are so many moving parts and it gets ridiculous at times. Batman is out of commission for much of the movie, which kind of seems like a good idea, but it's honestly a horrible choice for the third installment of a franchise. So that's second installment territory. And that's that's the kind of thing where you're supposed to go. Well, let me back up. Okay, so you have the hero's journey, right? We've talked about this ad nauseum, and you basically have the general trajectory of stories is that you kind of start out okay, things get really bad, then you learn from it, you get better, and you take on the big bad guy, and things are great now at the end instead of just okay. So you kind of have that. Well, in a trilogy, you have those three parts in each movie, but usually what people will do, and it works out well when they do it, is they take the middle part as the middle episode or installment as the nadir, the beginning as the okay, and the third as the rising up, learning from the mistakes and so on from a macro scale. So they'll still have those movements on a micro scale, movie to movie, but there's still an overarching arc to the trilogy. So to me, bringing Batman now back down in the like middle of the movie, of the third movie, is just a little, it just felt disjointed. It just didn't feel quite right. And to me, you know, Bane is not a great villain. I love Tom Hardy, don't get me wrong, but you know, where did they get this version of Bane from? I don't need the mindless version. I get that he's actually intelligent, but this guy's like Lex Luthor meets Luke Cage, which incidentally both also have bald heads. But he's just too much. He's too perfect and yet not really very super at all, which is confusing. And Catwoman is just underutilized, to say the least. And that ending with JGL and everything, it's just a no from me, fam. I don't know. That's me. I don't know if I'm just harping on it even more, but I think it could have done a lot of things better, and they kind of need to rethink what their purpose with this movie was.
Well, the purpose of this movie was to end the trilogy. But yeah, no, I get what you're saying. There were a lot of underutilized characters. There were, you know, plot holes, specific things that just didn't make any sense. So, you know, I can agree with some of it.
Well, I'll take it.
Although, I kind of like the description of Lex Luthor meets Luke Cage. That just sounds kind of hot.
It's kind of hot, isn't it? big old muscle-bound, vulnerable, smart, bald guy.
I just got to specify that there's only one live-action Lex Luthor that I can kind of want to get on this train meeting Luke Cage, and that, unfortunately, is the one from Smallville.
Yeah, I picture more of a Mr. Clean type personality. But like
comic Lex Luthor, actually, instead of like the crap we've gotten on the screen.
Right, exactly. Actual good-looking bald head, yes.
I'm going to go back to when we were just before they had announced Jesse Eisenberg as Eisenberg.
Right.
I must be hungry. Before they announced Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, you know, there was everyone was saying, oh, it should be, God, what's his name? Heisenberg. What's his name? What's his real name?
Jesse Eisenberg?
No, Heisenberg.
Oh, right. From Breaking Bad.
Yeah, but what's his name? It's Heisenberg now. I don't care. So,
I'm sorry. I'm blanking too because we're recording. So, of course, I am. Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, for some reason, all I could think of was Walt Whitman, and I knew that was wrong.
Yeah, it's Walter White, but he actually, there is a Walt Whitman cameo, so to speak. Yeah, it's interesting. So, yeah, go on.
I haven't even watched Breaking Bad, and I know so much about it already. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I was kind of picturing, you know, like, you know, Heisenberg as Lex Luthor meeting Luke Cage, and that's really hot.
Well, you know.
So I just want to. I don't generally like a bald dude unless they got a good shaped head. And why? What's Mike? Mike, whatever his last name is, that did Luke Cage. He's got a good looking head.
We're doing great with the names this episode. There's what's his name? What's the call?
Mike Coulter.
Very good. Nicely done. But but yes, much love to all the bald men out there. So let's move on.
What a weird thing to say.
They need the extra love.
I don't know, you know. But final thoughts about the dark.
I can just picture Jason saying, much love to all the bald men out there, as he's stroking his hand through his luxurious curls.
Right.
Yes, you know. I also have a fantastic shaped head, so I have it all going for me.
What?
I could go bald.
No.
I could do whatever I want to do with my hair.
No, you're not allowed to go bald unless Tess wants that. Otherwise, I'm putting my foot down.
If I talked like this, they might like it. Okay, maybe not. Put that one away. Okay, so final thoughts about The Dark Knight Rises. Jason, what do you think? Well, thank you for asking me.
We've lost this podcast.
Not if we believe, like Tinkerbell. We just have to believe it.
I start clapping. I believe. Okay, I'm done.
So our final thoughts about The Dark Knight Rises, let's take it home. This is the worst movie of the trilogy. It's not a garbage pile. It's still got Christopher Nolan directing it.
And writing the screenplay.
And writing it. And honestly, his brother Jonathan, you know, he's rocking it with Westworld. He did the thing with, you know, Spacey, The Blacklist. It's good stuff. You know, he's a good writer. And, like, you know, it was good writing, good directing. But, man, it was a letdown. And it's like a fumble at the 5-yard line with time running out. And, you know, I know sports. But basically the trilogy was on its way to being legendary, not just for superhero movies, but for all movies. And, you know, now we got that Bane voice, you know. So that was cool. That's about all we got from that third movie. I feel like it could have closed it in such a way that whole trilogy would be remembered in a block. But right now I think we have that Dark Knight was the best movie and people will just watch that alone. Some people also really like Batman Begins, which I like Batman Begins, and so you watch that and then The Dark Knight. But then I don't see anyone who's like, man, we should do like a marathon where we watch all three. It's just not good enough to be completed as a trilogy like that. It doesn't live up to the first two films, in my opinion.
That's because you're not a true Batman fan.
final thoughts about The Dark Knight Rises. Kareen.
I'm going to agree with you again. I know 3 times in 1 episode, everyone's going to die of shock. But because you were talking about like how people watch Batman Begins, people watch The Dark Knight. Nobody really goes, oh, I really need to go watch The Dark Knight Rises.
Right.
And yeah, I was, you know, we almost didn't do an episode on The Dark Knight Rises.
Right.
And we literally talked about it. We're like, nah, we'll skip it. But then, you know, we wanted to do a complete set. You know, it's like...
completest.
I mean, we're not going to do it with Indiana Jones, most likely.
Oof, I don't know if I'm that big of a masochist.
Well, we're not going to talk about Temple of Doom, but we are going to talk about Holy Grail.
Well, I was talking about Crystal Skull.
What?
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
What? I'm losing you. I'm not hearing what you're saying. What?
All right, go on. Good one.
But honestly, I don't think this trilogy could have ended any other way. I mean, even if no one else agrees with me, I mean, sure, it had issues, you know, one or two, like we saw Bruce going to the prison. We had a big old drawn out how to get to the prison scene. And then we've got the great Batman, Bane Breaks Batman scene, which was a wonderful comic cover. I think I have that issue around here somewhere. It was just, you know, it was just a really great fangirl, fanboy, fan person, nerd moment right there. I loved it. You know, like you see Batman and Bane in a movie and you expect that. But, you know, once he climbs out of the prison, boom, all of a sudden he's in Gotham. We don't know how he got into Gotham with all the bridges being blown up. We don't now know how he got from wherever in India. I can't remember. We don't know
it's,
how.
It's like Mediterranean, I think. It's or South American. I looked it up once. Maybe I'll put a link to a map. But yeah.
But probably not. But yeah. He got another continent. He was on another continent with no ID, pretty much none of this stuff. And, you know, how did he get back to Gotham? You know, we don't deal with that. It'll, boom, he's there. He's taking care of shit. And then, you know, we got my above reference points I talked about with Talia al Ghul and the Robin. But overall, I think Nolan wrapped up all the loose ends and he presented us with this neat little package. It was never going to be as good as The Dark Knight, not without Heath Ledger. And I think Nolan decided to go as far from The Dark Knight and still be considered as it's in the same franchise. And it's a weak movie, sure, but I still think it's the best ending that we could have hoped for. Like, no one was ever going to be able to follow up on the explosiveness of The Dark Knight. You know, it was a great movie, not just because of Heath Ledger. But that was a large part of it. And I think the fact that Nolan was upset about his death and then like he didn't really kind of want to do it, it just all boiled down to this is the best that we were going to get from them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got a point. It's a good point. So, Tess, what do you think for your final thoughts? Bring it home for us. Dark Knight Rises.
Yes. Well... You know, I like the whole thing. I like how it wrapped up. I like what it was for what it was. The whole thing to me really made me fall in love with comic book characters, and it just But if there if there isn't a fanfic about this particular movie, there should be. I'm not going to write it, but I'm just saying this definitely should be a thing.
There is. It's there.
For people. Oh, great. Good. but if you want to not think while watching a Batman movie and just want to let a movie flow over you, definitely watch this. Maybe get your favorite drink, sit back, enjoy the ride. You know, I feel like if you think about it too hard, you're going to start getting confused about where you are in the plot. Like, you're not going to enjoy it. You're going to start, you know, maybe getting like Jason. like this isn't one of those movies where you're like, I gotta watch it right after I watch the other movie. And it's gotta be completely related. And like, nah, fam. Like, it's not like that. Like, it's just for you to enjoy it. It's fun. You know, I liked it. But, I mean, I like a lot of movies. So, to me, you got to finish the trilogy. You know what I'm saying? You know, I guess that's all I'm saying. You know, finish the trilogy to say you did it. You know, you'll be good, bro. Like, if you want to see some fun action, you want to see some good music, some Batmobile, motorcycle, Bat Pods, whatever, you know. Like, you know, they got crazy names for it. But if you want to see anything like that, just watch it. You know, like, you don't have to think that hard about it. It's, you know, it's just fun. Like, you don't need to trip about it. You know what I'm saying?
I like that. I like that you're like, you don't have to think that hard about it. And that's literally all we did.
Yeah, you try to put us out of a podcast here.
I tried to give an economics lecture.
It was good. I appreciate it. It was great.
But yeah, no, but I get what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I will say it's kind of like from hearing you say that, it's like one of these stories where, you know, like an 85-year-old person decides to run a marathon. And, like, you know, at the very end, they can't make it, but everyone kind of, like, carries them the rest of the way. Yeah. With, like, hey, you finished. Yeah, you know, you know. Finished. Yeah. It counts.
Yeah.
I get you. I get you. Okay. That's, so, that's good.
Definitely what it's like. Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I like it. You know, it counts. You got past the finish line. And there's some good moments there at the beginning. So, yeah. Well, good stuff, everybody. Yeah, good stuff and good positivity from everyone but me. Corinne, where can I find The Dark Knight Rises streaming?
As of this recording, The Dark Knight Rises is not a part of any regular streaming subscription. It's doing so well. You can rent it from your favorite digital video store like Vudu. And it looks like it might be available if you have Sling TV. I'm going to throw the whole podcast in the trash now. But I can't verify that as I don't have Sling TV. And I don't know anyone who has Sling TV. So if one of y'all have Sling TV, check out and see if The Dark Knight Rises is there. And then let us know in the comments. Help the people out that need to see this movie. But as usual, buying your own copy is always a good option. You know, you might as well buy the whole Batman trilogy, Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy, if you don't have it. So to do that, you go to fictionfile.com and you click on our Amazon banner. We need that little bit of a kickback that we get if you buy something through that link to keep Jason in Monster so he'll keep editing the podcast.
Yeah, editing is in heavy quotes. And you know, the thing is, we don't have to throw this podcast out no matter how much we, you know, might have had fun and messed up here and there, because this is the Dark Knight Rises episode and no one's gonna listen to it.
Wow.
So,
hey, I have done my best to get people to listen to it. I go around and tell everyone that I sound like a kindergartner and then they listen to the podcast.
That's a great selling point. I should put that in the description.
It's also a bad selling point that I'm using this as someone I'm talking to.
Right. Ooh, talking.
Ooh.
Okay, well, shout out to the person that's talking to Kareed.
No, let's... do not do that. He listens to this podcast.
Oh, no. Well, I guess I'll have to edit it, quote unquote.
Thank you.
Let's see, guys, if someone wants to follow you and talk to you, where could they find you on the interwebs, Kareed?
You can find me on Instagram at nonlinearGirl, or you can find me on Twitter at nonlinearGirl with a zero.
Excellent. And Tess, what do you want to plug? Where can we find you?
You can find me on the Twitter at Tessellations, TESSELATIONZ, not an S. You can also find me on the TikTok at Tessellate_.
And everyone go download TikTok before it gets banned from the United States.
Or just gets bought out by Microsoft.
I would plug my TikTok, but it's basically just me giving 80-year-old advice to the youngsters. And I think the Chinese are using me as a proxy.
There's that great video of you with your fist in the air going, "Get off my lawn!"
Now, that would have gotten some views. Now, but you can find me, Sage Hazard with 2 Z's, on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter under The Fiction File, not to be confused with Fiction File MAG or Fiction File MAG, which is the official Fiction File Twitter. So, you know, always head over to fictionfile.com, check out the staff page, and you'll see everybody's links and goodies and everything to, you know, follow through on all of this. So thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, Corinne, and thank you, Tess, for coming back.
Thank you.
And so that's it for this installment of the Fiction File podcast. I want to invite you, the loyal listener, to fictionfile.com for more scintillating analysis like you heard today. And please don't forget to rate us if you like today's episode and subscribe to make sure you don't miss the next episode. Until then, I want to thank you for spending a little story time with us today. And for Tess Raven and Kareen Asbell, this is Jason Boyd and the Fiction File family wishing you a happily ever after.